Hello and welcome everyone. Today it's just Biagio and me. We don't have any Russ today for the first time in history. But we are going to
talk about the first Russless episode.
But we thought it was a great time to talk about reflect on the semester and talk about wrap up the semester. Now that Russ is not here. Not that he wouldn't let us do this, but you know. We have to give him a break sometimes.
Yeah, I think it makes sense on our side, right? It's finals week and it's been a long semester and Russ is now on the teaching side. So he doesn't share the gain and the pain of this part of our job, right? So
yeah,
it does make sense.
No, he doesn't. And his job is year round, which I'm glad that's not how my job is. I love the breaks. I love the breaks. Not that I'm free in the breaks.
That's what I was about to say.
On my own time, But it's busy, but I'm on my own.
The breaks are just our illusion, right? The breaks are just our illusion of being free or a break, but then actually is when we do majority of our work that is not involving teaching, right? That's where teaching, the research is getting done.
Without the breaks, research would really suffer, honestly. Even I do research throughout the semester, too. But what is happening is like most of the bulk of the work, the creative part of the work is done through the breaks. And then it's the labor that I save for during the semester. It's hard to, it happens some of that during the semester too, some of the creative work too. But I'm usually continuing the work I started in a break when I'm during a semester.
So I think one aspect, and this is especially for our student listener, right? One big aspect of our life one big aspect that students know about is us being in class and teach. But then there is the research or scholarship component, which takes a big part as well. And, you know, it's the most difficult one. And the third component is service, right?
I agree that research is the most difficult.
Research is the most difficult one because unless you have a revise and resubmit of, you know, deadlines, then you need to force yourself to allocate the time. For teaching, you will always allocate the time because you have to go to class and you don't want to look stupid or unprepared to your students. So you're going to spend the time for that. Service, you have a committee in a certain days or, you know, different things that you do in a certain day. So again, you're not going to go unprepared. And usually that's what you sacrifice is the research, but that's again as important as teaching for us. And, and another thing about the break, I think, is a fake break because break is also where we make big changes to our classes, right? If there is anything
without
that didn't
breaks,
work,
yeah,
without those breaks you can implement that. So it's really like the break is where we do research done a majority of like intensive time consuming projects, and then fix the classes and maybe enjoy a little bit of time.
I always set some like real break, like, and I can't do real break at home. We always travel for real break, and you know, you go to Italy, it's not that much possible for me to go to Iran, but my wife has family in different states, so we incorporate one of those, and we always like, it's easier to be on a break when you're traveling. But I 100% agree with you about the challenges of research, because teaching and service give you structure. That structure is given to you and you have to follow it. So that's part of the work that is done. But for research, you're entirely on your own. So you have to create that structure yourself. And, you know, professors who failed that part, it's much, much harder to succeed in actually, you know, writing a paper if you haven't built a workflow for your research, like a structure for your research. But breaks are the time that my brain slows down and I have room to think about, this, like the actual method of the work, or like the, you know, depth of the research. I think more deeply about the problem than like how to organize the work to get the paper out, which is like easier to do.
Yeah, I like one of like I think we should have an episode where we reflect over the like the entire year in terms of guests and what we learn from them. But one thing that struck me, well, one of the recent guests, which is Dr. David Gunkel, was his ability to allocate, you know, 5 hours to write every single day. And for him, writing is part of his research. And so there is so much to admire in that, because it's like work ethic, but it's also passion, but it's also like ability to manage everything else and do not sacrifice that component of our work, which is the easiest one to sacrifice. And my advisor was saying the same thing to me. Allocate always 2-3 hours for research, to read papers, write something. But reality is, it's very hard for a junior faculty, or like very hard in general when you are in a school that is not R1, meaning he has a teaching load that is more than 2-1, right? Two classes in one semester, one class in the other semester, or 1-1. Some schools are 1-1. Then you have plenty of time to do your research. Of course, you have different expectations in terms of quality and quantity, but overall, I think balanced school is can also be challenging on the fact that teaching a lot. I had 3 courses this semester. And you're doing, you have Serene. To do you have to do the prepping for the classes, but you have also to do the grading and all that comes with it, right? I've been the student, which is a great, I love that part of my job. I love teaching and I put a lot into it. But at the same time, it takes a lot of time, right? It takes a lot of time and energy, and that's why, like, it's hard. It's not, being a professor is not an easy job. I hope our listeners realize that. But I think one of the misconceptions is that we just go to class and teach, and that's all we do the entire day.
Because that's the visible part. So to the public, that's the visible part of our job. The other, like, for example, if you look at other jobs, most of them don't have any visible aspect. So people assume that you're working the entire time. So it's like, I don't see what, like, let's say an office manager does all day in like in Home Depot. We don't see that, right? We assume that they work all day. But for professors, they see what we do in front of them. They say that they see that we teach 2 or 3 classes a semester, and it's like, what are they doing the rest of the time? And the reality is it's just we are busy all the time. So let me tell you this anecdote. My mom visited this summer, and it was summer, right? It was my break. And my mom visited for the first time in 10 years. And I worked during the days when she was here. And when she was on the phone, I heard her, my dad wasn't here. She was talking to him and said, he is busy. He's working all the time. It seems like it's professor. And he's a professor and it's summer. And but he is working all the time. It's like, yeah, I have to work during the day. I can't afford to, like, she was here for a month. I can't afford to just take a 1 month break in summer. It's not possible. I took several days. We went on little trips and stuff, but she saw behind the scenes that, look at that, they are working like everyone else, will probably more, especially for someone who's tenure track and like so stressed with like me to make the, hit the numbers. Then I have to work like that.
This is part of our life, and it's so, I think at this point it's normal, right? After you do a couple of years, you mentioned I go to Italy for a long time in summer, but it's not like I go there and I don't open my laptop, I don't do any work. I actually wake up early in the morning before all my family gets up, the kids and so on and so forth, to do as much work as I can. So during the day I can spend some time with them, but still there are meetings, there are calls and hours dedicated to that. So you never have vacation, to be honest with you.
While you're there for like several weeks, you do take a couple of days at a time.
I do one week at the beach, usually one, and in that one I very limit my amount of work and at the computer.
Isn't that nice that we pick that 1 week and don't have to get permission from anyone where that week is? So that's the nice part.
But it has to be like during the summer, right?
We don't have any vacation other than breaks, but we get to pick. It's 4 months of the year that we get to pick exactly. Yeah. We have full control of our. That's very nice.
And to be honest, I said to a couple of my students lately, because I have a couple of good students this semester, or even my TA, I was talking about, like, you know, PhD and what it is like. And, you know, it is an option, right? For some of them, especially those that cares deeply about learning more than grades. Yeah. and they are curious and they want to learn more. And, you know, it's, yeah. it's 4 years, it's a lot of work, not a lot of fun, right? But at the same time, the academic life gives you flexibility that no other jobs gives you, in my opinion, unless you own your own, you know, business and you have people that works for you and you can take, you know, time off whenever you want. And we cannot take time off whenever you want, but that 4 months that you're talking about, we can distribute the work as we want, right?
Yeah.
If you are
best
super good.
Best 4 months of the year.
Right. If you are super good, if you are super good, technically, you can take more than a week per year of vacation, right? Or real vacation.
Yeah.
It's just, it's a tenure track, which is, means we have to do extra work to prove that we are worthy of tenure. And even after tenure, to be honest, because there is always to go to full professor. So yeah, I don't think he ends at tenure. I think he will even be worse afterwards, to be honest, because then you have more requirements, more advanced requirements, right?
So but you don't have a deadline. That's a nice
point. True. But even on that point of view, they can, for example, if you're not productive on the research side, they can add you more classes. So I heard stories of professors, they got tenure and then after a while they were not productive. So they ended up becoming instructors because they were having like 5 classes to teach a semester. And you know what I'm saying?
Yeah, like you gotta be busy. You can't just be like, that's completely fair. People think that tenure is, you get tenure, you don't have to do your job anymore. Yes. It's not like that. You're a little more secure.
More secure on the job stability side of things, but you also have more expectation, right? Because you are expected to run committees, expected to do more committees, whatever it is that comes with it, you know, service side, teaching side, and research side, the expectations are higher. So you have more stability on the job. So unless you're doing some major things, they should be safe. But I don't see myself slowing down, honestly, until I retire.
Yeah.
To be honest, because every single steps or milestone or achievement will bring more things to do. And I think it's cool, part of our jobs. But I wanted to ask you this. I wanted to ask you, how was your semester? And I wanted to share one of my feelings that I have every semester. And I wanna see if I'm the only one feeling that way or if it's shared among other professors. So let me start with how was your semester and overall, your reflection on it.
My semester was not a normal one, because I had to take a family medical leave in the middle for almost 3 weeks. So most of it was a lot of accommodating and recording online and stuff. For example, I had to do like some teaching activity during the final exam. It was like kind of a part of the exam, so it was evaluation still, but you know, it's not something I've ever done before. But I hope that it's not ideal.
Yeah.
So,
but it happens.
I managed.
Life. Yeah.
Yeah. I managed to just lose one class. So I taught 14 lectures instead of 15. So but two of them were online. So.
But that's the good thing of technology, right? It gives you the flexibility. Yes. Because canceling 3 weeks out of 16 will be extremely challenging for you and the student to go over the content.
And it's It's very unfair to students. It's basically telling them for a service that they've paid, they're not going to get it. And good luck getting a refund from university for that. Absolutely not. Nothing will come out of university. But how the things work. Yeah. So that was how my semester was not a very normal one. But what I normally try and do is we have these instructor questions, right? When we add to evaluation, I add those and incorporate the comments in the following semester. One of the things I did last year was I made everything in person and removed homework. So in class, and I removed homework. I have no homework. All they need to do is to prepare for in-class activities. So
like
anything that is
classroom, you do like you teach something and then they do the exercise immediately.
Yeah, they do exercise immediately, but here's the thing. That exercise is not graded, but that exercise is the same question as an in-class assignment, which is individual.
A simulation. Okay.
The next week, yeah. It's the same question, different data. So different input. So in the next class, they come in, they know the question. They don't know, for example, the business process that they're going to build it on.
Right.
And so they do the exercise collaboratively, but they do the assignment individually, and that's graded. So I got very positive feedback on that. And that is the first time in my life that my, in my 5 years of teaching, that my teaching evaluation hit 4.9. Before that, I was stuck at 4.8, I'm so sorry, 4.84 or 4.8 something.
4.8 out of 5 is really good. So
yeah, I have
so
been
the main
stuck
reason,
at 4.2 for 4 years.
The switch, right?
I think so, reason? Because that, okay. I think because, so students were way more engaged in lecture because that was connected to an exercise, and they were engaged in the exercise together because that was collaborative and it was directly connected to a graded assignment that they had to do.
Which I hope is not the reason why they were engaged, because that's the part I hate.
Yeah, I, well, at the end of the day...
I see the logic behind it. This is the logic behind it. I think flipped classroom... I do have, like, exercise in class after I, you know, I introduce something, they do immediately exercise and they are not graded as well. And they also are useful for them to get a, you know, a feeling how they are learning and so on and so forth.
I think they so like... Yeah.
I still have homework. I still have homework though for like a learning. I can talk more about my class. I don't want to cut you off. But the interesting part is that of the question, right? So when you were talking about adding some question, I do not add question to the regular NIU ones, but I do have an entry survey, midterm survey, and exit survey, right?
Okay.
Because so every semester I can always improve. Yeah, it's run by my... like on my own, and that way I can also like if some student provide a suggestion and you know they know it's not anonymous, so if they provide a specific suggestion but it's not clear because you know they rush in to do those evaluation and whatever it is, I can always go back and say, hey, can you explain better what you mean by this and so on and so forth. But over time I agree with you. I think the feedback from the student that they are between quotes our customers, right, is the only way that help us to make decision that can improve their learning experience, right? In
that
our
is a
mind,
big part of it.
Yeah, in our mind, we can think about, you know, the perfect class, the perfect structure, but then maybe it doesn't, you know, it doesn't connect with the student, or maybe it's not the best way to cover those topics.
Yeah, we can think
students,
of the most creative ways. If it doesn't connect with the students, it's not useful. Yeah. And I think the part that increased my rating was exercises, not having homework or grade. I think it was the exercise because they got to use it right after. And that saved them reviewing, that saved them a lot of time reviewing it at home.
And it makes it tangible.
They learned it better.
Make it tangible, right?
Yeah, I think I also
want to point that, you know, it also depends on the institution where you're teaching and kind of like learn your students. So once they moved here, I tried to do things like I was doing at LSU, like the last 2 years of the PhD you teach. So I was teaching one class. first semester, so not the same, but still I was teaching, right? So I tried to do immediately what I was doing at LSU, but the population is very different, and not, you know, in terms of like, I truly believe every student is smart. I'm just saying like many of the people our student have at LSU were not working full time while taking a degree because they could afford that, and here there are a lot of, you know, people working full time, first gen students. And all those things you have to take into account because, I mean, in the end of the day, I these are hardworking students that need to take a full-time job to afford to take an education. And so they will not have the same amount of time at home to do the homework like they were doing at LSU, right?
Yeah.
And I'm not talking about, I'm not generalizing. Of course, there were some LSU students that were working as well and some NIU student that doesn't work. But... yeah, I think that's
in general the pattern.
Yeah, that's only way to do it and learn it is to try new things, never stay still, introducing new content based on the feedback or switching the methodology in which you are teaching. And flipped classroom is a great way to innovate the class without making major redesign.
I know. And when you tell them there's an exercise, they all wake up. Suddenly, like in the middle of lecture, you say there's gonna be an exercise. They're like, "What?" and they get up.
So but on the other side, it's also possible that the reason why they wake up is because it kind of interrupts the flow, right? I mean, can you hear me? I think I lost Amin.
Hello.
I think I lost you for a second. But I was about to say, can you hear me?
Yes, now I can hear you.
Yeah, I was just finishing. Yeah, I was just finishing that thought on the fact that they wake up when you say exercise, and for my experience, I think sometimes having those exercises in between, like not just telling that there is an exercise, but making them do an exercise, make them realize how to apply the things that you're teaching, and also gives a break to the, you know, flow of the class, because it's very hard to stay focused and engaged if somebody is just speaking for, you know, in your case, 3 hours, right? It's almost impossible. Even for 1 hour and 50 minutes, it's challenging to stay, have that level of attention. And, you know, there are always going to be a couple of them that are really into the topics and they love it and they're going to do it. But there is always some of them that, you know, are in the class, they don't love the class. So I think that's a great way to do it.
Now, how about your semester? How did that go? I heard from our earlier conversations that you have done a few things new. So what are they?
Yeah, so semester went well. I actually want to start from that point I was trying to ask you about. But I have always these feelings. This is my sixth year. But I always have that feeling at the beginning of one semester that I'm like, you know, every new semester you are resetting what you built the 16 weeks before, right? So you have a great group of students and you build a relationship, you gain their trust, they really understand that you care about them, and then you have to restart with a new group, right? And you have that excitement and you're nervous at the same time. And I think that's particularly true when you make changes that are like significant. So about a year ago, not last summer, the summer before that, I got this teaching grant from the provost office that was focusing on kind of change the way I was teaching my classes. And most of my classes, I would say all my classes, I teach programming in R. For undergrads and graduate students with the idea of doing predictive modeling. So data analytics class, pretty much, right? So one of the major obstacles I was getting was, you know, just at the installation level of the software, different operating system behaving differently, students struggling with the directory, subdirectory, and so on and so forth, right? So these are like, seems silly stuff for people that doing this for a long time of people from a technical background, but in a college of business, they can be like some solid barrier of entrance. And so a lot of people were like, you know, unplugging from the beginning or saying I'm not good enough, or like in the entry survey, they were saying, I'm very anxious about coding. I never coded before and please go slow and so on and so forth. Well, the good news at the end, they said, I want to code more. I want to learn more. So that's kind of the message. But I wasn't happy with the fact that they should, you know, always install software on their own machine. And so for the first time during spring, given that grant, I could use those money to access what is called POSI Cloud, which is a cloud version of our studio, which is, again, the idea I use for teaching the software. And so they were doing this and basically having a virtual version of our studio that runs in the cloud, and it works very well. But the problem is that it has a cost, right?
Yeah.
And it's a cost that I had just so much funds in my grant, and I could use it only for my undergraduate class, and I couldn't use it in my graduate class. So for my graduate student, there was still the struggle of, you know, especially the first few weeks, and then sometimes they were getting errors. I no idea how to control, and maybe it was the silliest thing, you know, installing the package the right way or overriding without, you know, installing some dependency. like stuff like that. I don't want to go in the technical side of things. So I was like, I need to find a solution. And the summer after my spring was the time, as I mentioned, right? The summer is the break, the biggest break. So it was the time I wanted to invest into something. So I ended up redesigning the class without using Posi Cloud, but so to make it accessible to all my students, I made it free. And I built a website for my class.
Oh yeah, and it's my first time. I have seen it. It's very impressive. For anyone who hasn't seen it, it's very impressive.
I built a website and then can code in my website and I can take care of all the dependencies. So everybody can use it. They can use it on their phone. They can use it on the iPad. They can use it if I have a Mac, a Chromebook. It doesn't matter. I'm not, you know, the other problem with when you teach software is that some students have the newest computer. Some students don't have a computer, right? And so they have to borrow. Sometimes the library doesn't have it. Sometimes. So I wanted to make it accessible to everybody. I need to give a big shout out to Netlify. You know, I can collect also student responses as a form and stuff like that. So a big shout out to them. I'll definitely hope I can partner with them again. But I think it's game changer. I think, again, many of my students love the fact that they can always access the material. Every Blackboard modules is just a link to the class. They go to the link and they access the class. Super easy, super intuitive. Some of them were traveling. They didn't want to bring their computer. Yes, go and review the stuff on your phone.
And could you tell our audience what are the contents? So I know that you have boxes that they can code inside, but what else is there and the structure?
So basically this is like before in the past I was using R Markdown files, and R Markdown is just allowing you to combine text, which for me will be a conceptual explanation of, you know, the different functions, the purpose. So I teach data analytics predictive modeling. So I start them to teach them about, you know, importing the data, environmental data, importing the data, manipulating the data, visualizing the data in the sense of data exploration, so EDA, and then we go to the modeling, and then we go to the, you know, communication of results, right? Creating report and presentation, right? So that's pretty much what I cover. And the structure of these files is basically, again, a combination of text and chunks in which they can execute the code directly below the text. So directly in the website. In fact, the code is executed in their browser. So as long as a student has access to the internet, it doesn't depend on the device for the speed. It really depends on the internet speed.
Which is not that much to just get take input and provide output. You know, even a simple internet connection would be sufficient.
Yeah. It's very sufficient. R is a pretty fast and optimized language, I have to say. Like, for example, in one of the manipulation class, I have a data set of 300,000 rows. And unless student was doing something unordinary, nobody ever like crashed or spend more than 5 seconds to get an output, right? But of course, it was my first time doing it. So I did all the stress testing over the summer. I have to shout out also my TA, Venkata Venil Nekant, because he helped me out, you know, building it, testing it, and going in this journey of, you know, going on the web browser with my classes and having a website. And so the one thing I tested was like, okay, does it crash or is it too slow and so on and so forth. But then one thing is to test it individually and one thing is to test it when you have 27 people at the same time in the same class on the same, you know, network, right? And so at the beginning, I limited the amount of rows in my data sets. And then one class I was like, well, let's try and see what happens if I use the 300,000 rows. And it worked. And it worked no problem. Okay. Again, unless somebody was doing something wrong, it never crashed. And that
I
was
think
awesome.
It's fine. You tested for one person. It's fine because it's very unlikely that all students...
I tested multiple persons. We asked other people to join, but they were not at the same time on the same network.
That's so never going to happen.
It's never going to happen for as much as you try. I had one other student, Vivida Chaudhary, that helped us out a lot in the testing. So I have to shout out to her as well. They were fundamental to me because, again, it was a new thing. I learned about those tools at the end of the semester. They just released this WebR package, and I learned how to use Quarto instead of R Markdown. and Netlify for deployment. So it's kind of like I learn a lot. And now I think the next thing will be building a website for myself, make it more appealing so I can show to the student that might want to take the class a few lectures so they can get a feeling for the class. You know, I like I can use it for so much more than what I did just in class. But I think the student loved it. You know, one part of in the feedback that I get, one part that, you know, some of the most advanced one, the one they already know how to code, they say, oh, but it's not the same as coding in R, or what do we do? Not the same as coding in R, not the same as using RStudio, right?
Yeah, because
they code in R. The code is exactly the same. The engine is exactly the same.
Yeah, but the environment is not. Yeah.
Yeah, they don't see the environment, right? And that is you know, limitations, right? You cannot have the perfect class, but do the drawbacks, are the drawbacks affected by the positives? And definitely the answer is yes to that. And
yes,
plus,
I agree.
If you learn
I agree
how to
that
code,
it is yes.
Yeah.
You can code in any other environment because learning the environment is not a problem.
Yeah.
Everyone can catch on. Yeah. But I think the most important thing your class does, you talked about the barrier of entry. You just tell students, give that confidence that don't worry, you're going to be able to code because everyone is afraid of it because they don't know. Like it's just too scary. And then when you make an environment where they feel comfortable and they know that they will find any information that they're missing right there where they're writing the code, I think that it goes a long way.
And to be honest with you, one of the best part of my job is like end of semester and during the semester when some of the students in the entry survey say, I'm scared of this class, I might drop it, and so on and so forth.
Yeah.
I'm anxiety. They say, like, I want more. That was awesome. Thank you. That makes me super proud of not just my work, but the fact that this student being resilient and stay in the class and they put the effort to get to where they feel confident in using R, which can be R or it can be Python. It doesn't really matter. It's like coding is the thing, right? In open source software, that opens a lot of doors for you. Data analyst, data scientist is my target, right? For these classes.
It's very valuable, for someone who learns analytics to know coding. It's essential and valuable at the same time.
Yeah, and the good thing about it is that it's built to a level where it looks good, there are GIF in it, there are multi-tabs.
I've seen it. AI-generated, very interesting imagery.
So it's not like a plain not a plain website
it's
where
not
you say,
a
like I'm bored.
Boring experience. Yeah. It's
and
not.
Then you can do a book.
Very
a
fascinating
book for them. Yeah, I did a book for them as well where they can just go through the content without running the code. I do Friday challenges for coding with a leaderboard. It's very fun. There are so many cool things. I have some good feedback to keep improving, but I'm very comfortable. I'm very close to kind of the final form for it. And it's been fun and rewarding semester, to be honest. I can't believe it's over.
But, I know. It went by so fast, but for me it was, as I said, a little faster because lots of stuff happened during this semester for me.
Well, I guess the only thing we can do is wish to our listener a solid end of the semester, solid finals week. If somebody has still some finals left, I know my student have some on Thursday with me. And we'll be back, hopefully with Ross, if he's not too busy.
He's not too good for us. No, he's busy. I'm joking. I'm teasing him. He's not here. That's why.
Right,
but no, I'm happy. We had a good semester despite challenges for me. And you had challenges. So you had to redesign your course. So that's also very nice to accomplish. And I wish the best for our students. I think this was a great way to end this semester. This was a good topic for us. But we'll
best
be back.
Best of luck to those graduating, and we'll be back.
Yes.
And thank you for listening to another episode of The Gateway, brought to you by Northern Illinois University, where your future is our focus. And please, remember to love always the promise of tomorrow today.